Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, some new changes for 2023, and one of them is the changes to IRAs. And you say that Congress usually sneaks these through at the end of the year, and then we have to listen to you tell us what they are.
That's right.
And how they affect us.
Yeah, and true to Congress, doing things at the last minute, that's also what happened here. And so there are changes to IRAs, how much contributions you can take, the age at which you can take them. And so many different facets that I wanted to go through, just give some insight with IRA. So now this is not my perfect place. I'm an estate planner, right? Not a financial advisor, but these are important issues because in estate planning, I deal with people that have assets, and there's always questions that come up. So wanted to take a moment because I do follow the law, how it affects estate planning, and thought it would be a very useful discussion for listeners today because most individuals have some type of a retirement account, whether that's an IRA, whether that's a 401k, a 403b. There's always slight differences between those mechanisms, but they all end up being tax deferred accounts. So in other words, you haven't paid tax, and so they go into a bucket without paying taxes so they can grow. So we need to have the discussion because this influences a high number of people. As a matter of fact, a great amount of individuals. So just wanted to take a moment, talk about the new IRA changes and what does it mean.
Well, is this common for the IRAs to change? Does this happen every year?
Well, it doesn't happen every year, but is it common? Yes. As a matter of fact, we've had multiple changes over the past 3 years specifically that seem to keep moving how Congress wants to deal with IRAs. And of course, Congress passes the law, and so the IRS really does nothing except uphold the laws that Congress institutes. And so really we need to focus on whenever we say, oh, the IRS is after us, well, those are backed by laws. They're codified. And so really it's Congress who looks at the current law and ends up making recommendations. They go through a whole committee, subcommittee, and everything else type of process. There we go. Okay. There, I'm spitting all over myself today. They go through a long process, and then they ultimately get enough votes to pass. So it's Congress that passes these laws. And yes, in the area of taxation, laws move all the time. They don't always influence IRAs. They don't always influence estate planning. But when one asset gets maneuvered, that does change estate planning. So does it happen every year? No, not every year. Is there always something that is changing in the law and in tax law? Yes, every year something is changing because Congress also has to build the budget. And how do you actually keep money coming into the government so they can keep passing these trillion-dollar budgets and extra money going out? Well, you can only do that through taxation in the states. Mm. So therefore, taxes are always moving. And yes, Congress is the culprit. And so this year, I'm not sure exact date, the 26th or 27th of December, they passed a new law.
That omnibus bill that everyone was complaining about.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah. And there's new laws that are in the depths of that that changed IRAs. Mm. So this year, something has changed. Does it happen all the time? Well, it happens frequently enough that we need to stay on top of it. And so yes, it moves a lot.
Does this affect Roth IRAs?
No, there's no adjustment to Roths this year other than contribution limits. So when the limits were changed, it will change a traditional IRA and it will affect, therefore, how much you can put into a Roth IRA. So when we capture IRAs, there are different categories of IRAs. You're exactly correct. But the Roth IRA is still a vehicle, still an opportunity to take after-tax money and drop it into a investment account. And then all of that will grow tax-free from that point afterwards. So the contributions change, but the law itself, so Roth IRAs are still an opportunity for people to take advantage of.
Okay, so what are some of the highlights of the new laws?
Well, one of the bigger things we always look at are how much can we set aside an annual contribution limit. So Congress says that we're not going to let you put in $100,000 into this tax-free vehicle and really rack up an unlimited amount of money. We are going to limit how much you can actually set aside for your future. And that has kept growing over the past years. So right now, the annual contribution limits have risen slightly. But in order to make any contribution to an IRA, whether it's a traditional IRA or whether it is into a Roth IRA, you must have earned income. So if you have no earned income, then you do not have the ability to contribute anything. So you can't just take from your savings and drop it into an IRA or into a Roth IRA. So there's things like backdoor Roth conversions to where you take your IRA, pay the taxes. Well, that's earned income, and so then you can dump it into your Roth IRA vehicle. But if you don't have income per se, then you cannot contribute. So that's issue number one. That's always been how it has worked. It still works that way. So when you have income, in 2022, if you were 49 or younger, then you could put in $6,000. This year, it has gone up by $500, so you can put $6,500. So anyone who is under the age of 50, you can then put in $6,500. If you are 50 or older, then the IRS considers you to be old. So I've entered into a new category in life. That's kind of unfortunate, but that's okay. More wisdom then, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're 50 or over, then they allow you to do what they deem to be a makeup, a catch-up provision, and you can add $1,000 extra. So that means that last year was seven, and now it's going to be $7,500. So it's not that. So the catch-up provision is that you get to add an additional $1,000, and that's because a lot of people have not done a good job saving, and most Americans, unfortunately, don't have a strong financial plan of what they do with their monthly money and have a strategic plan to put money aside. So Congress goes, well, how about if we encourage people that by the time they're 50, they may have actually wised up to this savings gig and they're starting to think about their future, their financial future. They may start feeling insecure. We probably got them at a good age to where they'll start actually putting more money aside for themselves. And that's what we actually want. As society, we want you to take care of yourself financially. We don't want you to enter into Medicaid to where we have to take care of you as society. We want you to be financially and fiscally responsible. So therefore, at the age of 50, there's a catch-up provision, and you can contribute an additional $1,000 to the $6,500, so a total of $7,500 if you're 50 years or older.
Does this include matching funds from your company if they do that?
Well, that would end up going towards a 401k. And so this is for IRAs. Oh. This is not for 401ks. There's different contribution maximums. If I remember, it's $22,500. Don't quote me on that, but I didn't look at that number specifically. So that's a different system, okay. a different subsection of the law concerning tax deferred accounts. So these are for IRAs. This is when you are going to take your personal money and contribute it. And they play off of each other. So make sure you get correct information on if you have a 401k versus an IRA versus a SEP plan. If you work for yourself. Then all of these different buckets have different rules.
Okay.
You need guidance.
So we're just looking at IRA only.
This is IRAs only right now.
Okay.
Okay. So
what are some other new highlights?
So those are the high level highlights. Now, why we want to have people contribute is because, like we said, we want people to save for their future. We want people to be financially responsible. So what Congress has determined is that if we can give you an opportunity to take finances and set them aside in totality before they're taxed and then grow tax-free, that will be a benefit to you individually, therefore a benefit to society. So, for example, let me give you kind of just a brief background of IRA so we can get on the same page. Let's say you make $75,000, and in that year that you've made $75,000, you want to contribute $5,000 to your IRA. So the law allows you then to take $5,000, shift it over into a tax-deferred account, an IRA account, and that is not taxed at the time that you have earned it. So you've actually earned $75,000. You're supposed to pay taxes on everything that you earn is the foundational principle of IRS law. But there are certain carve-outs. So this is a carve-out. We can move $5,000 over. Then you are going to be taxed on the remaining $70,000. But that $5,000 can grow in a tax-deferred account for a period of years, and it will grow tax-free. So now, when that account reaches a certain level, or when you reach a certain age, then you are going to have imposed on you what is called a required minimum distribution. And those required minimum distributions then are going to be times when you are required by the term, by the language, to actually take money from your IRA. So there's a couple age differences that we need to look at when we're dealing with IRAs. Number one is that you can't use that money until you have reached 59 and a half. If you use the money, there are a few exceptions that you can have a $1,000 emergency and you can withdraw $1,000 without penalty. But if you withdraw money for any other purpose than an IRS-designated purpose, such as health, if you had a health issue, you can then go back into your IRA without the penalty. But for the most part, these are funds that are intended for your retirement. So if you touch these before 59 and a half, then you are going to be taxed at your current income rate, and there's going to be a 10% penalty on top of what you've taken. So the idea is that you are setting aside funds, building your financial future so that it's available when you are beginning to think about actually stop working. And that right now, 59 and a half is the age that you can actually reach in and start taking funds out. But I know we're up against a break, so we'll come back with the other side of the equation, which is, when are you required to take? What age are you required to take? Because there are some new changes in that number.
Okay, talking about new changes to
IRAs. Yes.
With the IRS.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to enforce the IRA law.
We'll come back with more of this discussion in a moment. People are intrigued. How do they find out more about your services, Paul?
Well, head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul Grant is telling us about new changes to the IRA for 2023, and we were talking about the required minimum distribution and some changes in that law as well.
Yeah, so at a certain age, it used to be 70 and a half in 2019. That was changed to 72, and that was with the Secure Act in 2019. And now with the Secure Act 2, that's what it's called, the second aspect of the Secure Act, now beginning immediately in 2023, you can wait until you are 73 to actually start taking distributions. As a matter of fact, it's not waiting until so that you can. It's that you are now required at the age of 73 to take distributions. Now, if we think of it on a practical level, this almost makes sense, which is the IRA has allowed us to put money aside without paying taxes, and the growth of it has also not been taxed. So at some point, Congress is going, we really need to start taxing that money, and we really need to start getting some of it back because we gave this opportunity. So the IRS keeps raising the age because life expectancies continue to expand, although actually there's reports now that it actually took a dip in the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. But besides that, so now the required age that you must start taking distributions from your IRA, that is now 73 years old. The law also puts in that in 2033, if we ever get there, that it will move up to 75. But that's so far away that Congress will at some point change that. So don't put too much weight in there. But right now, 73 years old is the required minimum distribution so that you don't get penalized with 73. So there you go. This is a different age. It has changed. It's not 72 anymore. It's now 73.
What is that minimum when it says a required minimum distribution?
Yeah.
That you've got to take at least 10% of your IRA?
So there's a mathematical formula, and what it's derived of is how much was your account balance on December 31st of last year? So if I'm going to take an RMD this year, I'm going to look at the value of all of my retirement accounts across the board. It doesn't matter where they came from, but if they are in a tax-deferred status other than a Roth IRA, then I'm going to look across the board and I'm going to total them all up. And what is the value of all those accounts? Because, you know, we may hold accounts in different pockets or different institutions. So what is the total amount of value? And then there is a certain mathematical formula based upon my age that tells me how much I am required to take. So depending on my age versus the amount of IRA money I have, I am required to take so much money, and the IRS has that formula, and you, typically your financial advisor is going to assist you in taking that. And it's each individual age. So if I'm married and I have accounts in my name, I use my age and my value of accounts, and my wife, she may be a different age, so she uses her age and her accounts that are in her name to take her required minimum distribution. So we don't get to combine them or find a median age or anything else with marriage. We actually do it individually. There's one last thing that because there is a little bit of a trick, is that if your spouse is 10 years or younger, so if you have an 11-year gap or bigger, in your age differential in married couples, then you actually get to use a different table to determine your required minimum distributions, because the IRS is going to say, well, if you have a spouse that's much younger than you, then we need to preserve those that fund a little bit longer, because we think that that person behind you is going to survive and they'll need a little more money. So actually, if you have a 10-year gap or more, then you don't take as much as someone who might be your same age because of your marital status. But otherwise, you're taking it for yourself, your spouse for themselves, and their different calculations across the board.
Okay, so what happens if you do not take your RMD?
Yeah, that's a bad day. if you don't take your RMD in a given year, then there is a fairly steep penalty on the amount that you did not take. So if you're 75, which is clearly over 73, I know this because, well, you know, math is so good and easy for attorneys. It's actually not. So 75, okay, and you forgot to take your required minimum distribution. Let's say you usually take it at the beginning of the year, and now we're at the end of the year and you thought you did, but you missed it. You didn't. You changed a habit or something. Now you missed it. Now what? Well, get this. Let's say that the calculation that we just talked about, that you were required to take $7,000 for that year's distribution. The penalty on that used to be 50% of that sum. So you'd have a $3,500 penalty. Now, that is a new section of this current law, which is they bump that down to 25%. Okay. But still, a 25% penalty is one of the steepest penalties in the taxing system. 50% was definitely there. So we don't want to miss. As a matter of fact, that's what they're saying. Don't miss this specific thing. This is where a good financial advisor can really help you out. That's typically where you get your information, is by working with an individual financial advisor. I don't do the calculations. Don't call me. But a financial advisor will really assist you in making sure that you're not going to miss it. Keep track of all your accounts and make sure you get to the right number, because this is a steep price to pay if you miss it. And by the way, that's plus you get to add all of that to income. So you'd put the whole line on income, and then you would pay a fee in addition to whatever the tax rate was supposed to be. So it's hefty. Don't miss it.
Okay, so what if you took an emergency withdrawal before 59 and a half? The age of 59.
Yeah, if it qualified as an emergency, then it's water under the bridge. It's just that you have less value in there. So really, no harm, no foul for emergency uses. It doesn't hurt you, provided that it fits one of the IRS categories. So before you start tapping in to your IRA for what you may consider a life emergency, you got to make sure
paying off credit cards or whatever.
Correct. Yes.
That doesn't count.
Correct. Or that you that you are missing income because you're not working right now. Just know that there's going to be a penalty on that, and you may want to get some professional advice of whether that's the right decision for you or not.
Okay, anything else with the new laws that we might need to
know? Yeah, one last thing, which I thought was really cool, actually, which is if you have a 529 plan and you have not used it for educational purposes. So a 529 plan is being able to move money into a specific account. That grows tax-free, but it must be utilized for educational purposes. Now, there may be times when someone gets scholarships and we didn't use the 529. Well, Congress introduced what I think is a pretty cool little gig here, which is you can now take a 529 plan and rotate that, or without penalty and without taxes, move it to a Roth IRA account. So that would open up and broaden the usage of a 529 plan that's just sitting there that is now going to be used for education, but now you don't need to use it for education. Now, it's there is a lifetime amount that you can maneuver money through this system, and it's $35,000 in a lifetime. you still can only move and contribute to a Roth account the maximum amount allowed, as we discussed earlier, which is if you're under 50, it's $6,500 or the $1,000 catch-up provision. So you can't exceed that amount in moving it from a 529 plan over into a Roth IRA. But I think this is a pretty good gig. It makes sense. They're both tax deferred. They're both after tax money. So it's just going to unlock that you can use those funds later down the road.
Well, so how does all this affect estate planning? Because you're not a financial advisor.
I'm not.
An estate planner.
Yeah. And so every person, when you're thinking about your estate plan, there's different assets that you own, and they're all going to be taxed differently upon your death. Some of them get a step up in basis, so there's not going to be a tax. But IRAs, it's one of the buckets that is definitively going to pass to your beneficiaries and have a tax. With the new tax laws that were implemented in 2019, as far as inherited IRAs, we may want to take a family approach to how much you take from your retirement accounts. You may not want to just take your minimum distributions. You may want to take more because that may benefit the family as a whole. Mm. So when we think about IRAs and how they fit into estate planning, we need to consider what are the long-term effects upon the family and not just for me and me alone. And that's what estate planning should do. It should look at the family holistically. Estate planning should make sure that every asset is captured under the plan properly and that it's going to pass in the most tax-efficient manner. So if you'd like more information, head over to legacyandfaith.com. Would love to connect with you. There's past podcasts. There's educational opportunities coming up where we discuss some of these things, ways to communicate with us. So head over to legacyandfaith.com. Would love to meet you.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.